Hello and welcome to the Elastico podcast once again. I'm Christopher Atkins, and joining me once more is the Elastico.com's Rio Coimbra. Hello, Rio.
Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm good. Have you recovered from Saturday night in Munich?
Yeah. Not quite yet. I think I still have a big grin on my face that probably won't go away for a week.
I will explain though, Rio wasn't actually in Munich, but he's a big Chelsea fan. And also on the line, we have James Young once more from Brazil. Hello, James.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Rio. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you, James. You're a local-based expert. You enjoying the start of the Serie A season in Brasileirão?
I am, with certain reservations, which I'm sure we'll get onto later in the program. As big kickoffs go, it's always a little bit of a slow burner in Brazil. But yeah, today was good. There were some interesting games.
Well, the Brasileirão kicked off this weekend, as I've just explained. So we're going to start off with have a bit of a look at the season ahead. And to start off then, we'll run through this weekend's results.
To go through it somewhat quickly, Palmeiras tied Portuguesa 1-1. Same result between Sporting, who just were promoted, with Flamengo. Figueirense 2-1 against Náutico. Botafogo in the big Clásico against São Paulo. Botafogo came out 4-2 winners, which is probably the biggest talking point of the weekend. Corinthians reserves lost by 1 to Fluminense reserves. Internacional, Damião again scoring, doesn't stop scoring, helped Internacional beat Curitiba 2-0. Ponte Preta lost 1-0 to Atlético Mineiro. Vasco reserves beat Grêmio reserves 2-1. And the last two games, both 0-0 draws, Cruzeiro and Atlético Goianiense, and Bahia and Santos.
Well, there you go, James. There's the run-through. We'll start with something close to home for you, if you like, and that was Sport against Flamengo. And a good result for Sport. They were unlucky not to win the game.
Yeah, and they played well. You know, it's very easy to be negative about teams from the Northeast, but Sport have got some players that could do well in the division, and they were probably the better side on Saturday night. Felipe Azevedo, the striker they've brought in from Ceará, he played well. Marquinhos Gabriel got the goal. They've a good volante or zagueiro, depending on where he's playing, Toby. And they played at a fast pace in front of a big crowd. I think probably the biggest of the weekend. I think 28,000. And they were on top for most of the game. Then when they scored through Marquinhos Gabriel, they unfortunately seemed to lose their nerve a little bit, and they let Flamengo back into it. And Flamengo sort of dominated the later stages. Maybe could have won, but settled for an equaliser and a point through Wagner Love.
One thing there, James, you mentioned Toby playing very well in the volante position. They've also got a very strong centre of defence with Ed Carlos, who used to be at Cruzeiro and Grêmio, and also Bruno Aguiar, who used to be at Santos. That might serve them well this season.
It might, and they have a goalkeeper who's been there for a long time now, and gives them a really solid base behind that. Magrão, who's a terrific goalkeeper, doesn't get probably the praise he deserves because again he plays away from São Paulo and Rio. But they've got a solid spine, and Wagner Mancini has just come in as a manager, so we'll see how it goes. You know, again they played well today, and they have got some good players, but it will be interesting to see what happens if they hit a losing run, and when they come up against the bigger teams, because Flamengo at the moment are still an inconsistent side. They're not. I don't think I would class them as one of the top sides at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how Sport do as the season goes on.
Rio, I'm sure in your Chelsea-inspired drunken state, you didn't care too much about Flamengo's result, but some worrying signs. Yet again, Ronaldinho failed to fire, and almost overly reliant now on Wagner Love.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case. I think this Flamengo side, as you just said, is very reliant on Wagner Love right now. I think he's kind of the one bright light of this entire season so far for Flamengo. He is ever reliable. He was there again today. He had a few opportunities. Probably should have scored another goal, but did get an important goal to at least secure a point for Flamengo. And, you know, Flamengo are bringing in Ibson from Santos, so he will add a little bit of creativity, a little bit of grit to the Flamengo midfield. He is a former Flamengo player, very successful with the club in the past, and the fans absolutely love him, so that should be another good signing. But, yeah, still worrying signs around this over-reliance, so to speak, at least mentally on Ronaldinho, who is the captain and supposed to be the leader and example of the club, but, you know, not really living up to expectations or, you know, the immense salary that he receives.
Moving on then to the what you said was the big talking point of the weekend, that was Botafogo against Sao Paulo, which was shown live on ESPN in the UK, which is a big step. Live, well, it was delayed, but Brazilian football on TV in the UK, so that's good to see. It was two of the bigger teams then, Rio, full strength as well, and Botafogo came through 4-2 winners. Herrera with that hat-trick. He's a striker who's been around a bit. He was at Corinthians before, but he's always good to get a goal.
He is, yeah, and you know the interesting thing about the game is that São Paulo actually went ahead twice. They were very much in control of the games at times, but didn't really manage to sort of control the game after they went ahead. Especially the last goal that São Paulo gave up was really just a terrible defensive mistake at the back by the defensive midfielder Maicon, who just tried to play the ball out and essentially gave it away for Herrera to complete his hat trick rather easily. And yeah, you know, Herrera came in the second half, actually. He replaced Loco Abreu, had a sort of a typical Herrera goal to get his hat-trick started, which was a powerful header in the box. You know, he's a big guy, very similar to Loco Abreu in that respect, that he's sort of a target man in the box for crosses. São Paulo, I think, you know, there were signs there of what they're capable of. Luis Fabiano looked very good, very hungry, got a goal. Lucas was in and out of the game. Jadson had a good game, got his goal, and was really pulling the strings. But São Paulo sort of lacked, you know, concentration at the back and really sort of, you know, gave the game away, I would say.
And James, watching the game, there was some good signs for Botafogo in terms of the mobility of their attack. It was very fast-paced. Vitor Jr. in particular was very influential. Mike Oswell didn't have his best game, but we know what he can do. And then, obviously, Herrera adds a lot more ability to move around than Loco Abreu might. But then, was it more their attacking play, or was it a continued sign of Sao Paulo's defensive weakness?
I think a bit of both, probably. I mean, Botafogo always have, well, over the last couple of years, they've had talented sides. They have the a lot of good players, such as Renato's, the Volante was over in Seville for a long time. They have Renato. They have, like you said, Michael Swell, who's a player I really, really like. Vitor Jr. has given them some pace. So they're a good side, but a slightly fragile side. So it's a bit of both. They played well, but a stronger, more forceful side than Sao Paulo would have handled them more effectively, I think. Like you say, Sao Paulo let them back into it. Sao Paulo has so much attacking talent. You know, I mean, that front four, well, not front four, but creative four or five, if you want to include Cicero, which is Casemiro, Cicero, Jadson, Lucas, and Fabiano is terrific. But then Bruno Cortes is also great going forward. But I wonder, does that much attacking talent mean they're a little bit lackadaisical when it comes to closing down and then tracking back so that the defense is left exposed? And yeah, I mean, letting four goals in against Botafogo in your first game is really not a good sign.
James, then, do you think maybe Casemiro has a lot to learn in that respect? He was substituted in, I think, the 78th minute, at which point he'd only run, according to the stats, 3 kilometers, which is a lot less than anyone else on the pitch. And when
I didn't know that,
and also in the midfield, who isn't your typical holding midfielder, if you like. He's more of a ball player, and two very attacking fullbacks in Cortez and Douglas. Do you think that's part of the problem? There's not enough protection for those two centre backs.
Definitely. If you have that much attacking ability, then you probably don't need another ball playing defensive midfielder. You would want someone a little bit more solid, or certainly busier. Someone like Aroca, who covers more ground, or even Pierre at Atletico. I mean, you can think of a lot of names, but yeah, Casemiro is great, but he's so talented, and he becomes almost languid sometimes, which is not one of the requirements for his position, you know.
Rio, you looking for a big season from Casemiro?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways this will be the make or break season for him, and sort of where his career is headed. You know, he's going into the season with a lot of promise, but a few question marks over attitude and consistency. So, you know, he's currently in the São Paulo first team, you know, is a guaranteed starter. We'll have to see if the season ends that way. He had, like I said, he has the potential to show and really grow this year. You know, he's still very young. So, you know, I think now is his time to prove to the world if he can be a world-class defensive midfielder.
One final point then before we look at the season as a whole. You mentioned that this weekend saw Corinthians reserves take on Fluminense reserves, Fluminense winning 1-0 at the Pacaembu. James will speak more in a second about why this kind of scenario occurs. But first, Rio, some interesting young players involved who we've mentioned before. Corinthians starting with two 18-year-olds at centre-back, Marquinhos and Antonio Carlos, while Marcos Jr. and Samuel played up front for Fluminense. So some young players getting a chance.
Yeah, it's always great to see. And you know, we've spoken in the past about that defensive duo of Marquinhos and Antonio Carlos. You know, they came through a very successful Corinthians youth side. Marquinhos has some Brazil under-17 experience. Antonio Carlos is the captain of the Corinthians youth side that were so successful in the Copa Junior. So, you know, they've gotten a couple games each earlier in the year in this state championship when Corinthians have played the B-side, and it's great to see them also getting the opportunity in the even bigger and more important Brasileirão. So, you know, I think from watching the game, they played well. You know, they're sort of obviously not too experienced, and you see a few flashes of nervousness. But you can tell that there's a lot of raw talent there, and it's, again, great to see them getting the opportunity.
James, in this situation where you've got the opening day of the league season and teams are playing reserves, it's not ideal, is it? I mean, it's partly a cultural thing. It's also just the schedule of, as a whole of the Brazilian season, the way it drags on for so long. You've got so many competitions overlapping at particularly this point of the season. It makes the league championship itself a bit secondary in importance, because teams feel, I guess, that they can pick up the points later in the year.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. It really is. As you say, the state championships run from January to May. And I wrote about this in an article this week. They finish on Sunday. They finished last Sunday with these grand finals across the country, which was the focus for most players and teams and fans. At the same time, the Libertadores is happening, and we're getting into the do or die stages of that. There were games on Wednesday, and the second leg of the same games will be next Wednesday. At the same time, the Copa do Brasil is reaching its latter stages. So you have these three factors. You have tired teams from the state championships. You have the two big knockout competitions coming to a head, and then the league championship starts somewhere in the middle of all that. And it starts with a whimper and not with a bang. Unfortunately, I mean, the crowds this weekend were from what I could see. I haven't checked them all, but they looked They looked fairly miserable in a lot of stadiums. I know Sport had 28,000, but there weren't many in the Ingenio. There weren't too many at the Pacaembu either. And these are big games. Obviously, you can't expect people to go if they know they're going to be watching reserve sides. But there's another cultural factor, and I'd love to hear Rio's opinion on this, because the idea of Pontos Corridos in Brazil is relatively a relatively recent phenomenon. I think it's 10 years or so, something like that, that they've run what you would consider an orthodox league championship where every team plays each other twice and then you have a winner. Before that, it was always based on a league phase followed by a knockout phase. And so even though people, I've heard this said so many times by journalists and presenters and so on, and even managers saying, look, 3 points at the beginning of the championship is the same as 3 points at the end. People believe it, but at the same time, people know it's true, but at the same time, I once saw an interview where with a young player, and someone said this to him, the journalist said, you know, 3 points now are the same as 3 points at the end. He goes, yeah, of course. But you could see from his face, he was going, yeah, but they're not really, you know, because culturally it still comes down a little bit. There's still a little voice that says it doesn't matter so much at the end, at the start, because once you get to the end, that's when it really matters. So I think that kicks in, that kind of hangs over the whole thing. But yeah, the end result of all these factors is that what should be one of the biggest days in the calendar, the first day of the season, is very often a damp squib with reserve teams and then poor crowds, which is a real shame, a real shame.
Rio, what's your view on that? It does very much seem to be the case. You know, we saw it with sides last year as well, and it happens every year that it's almost as though they don't value 3 points at the start of the season in the same way.
I think that's pretty much 100% accurate, and you know, I've spoken of this Brazilian mentality towards that, even, you know, with things like the Libertadores group stages, where, you know, it's not obviously nearly as long as a full league season, but even for that, you see some Brazilian clubs not taking that first game of the group stages that seriously, or even, you know, thinking that they need 3 points because they sort of figure, well, you know, we'll just do well enough in the first few games, and then once there's, you know, sort of 2 games left in the group stages, then we'll just figure out what we need to win. So, you know, if there's already that attitude towards the group stages of a Libertadores, imagine the attitude towards, you know, a 38-game league season. You know, certainly there's this thought that, yeah, at the beginning of the year, that, you know, it's we're months and months away, you know, it's December before we get to the games that really matter. So, you know, what do these games matter right now? Which is obviously very different from the European perspective of it. One thing I will say is that, you know, although this attitude causes a sort of diminishing quality to the league itself, obviously it's not as good for the league that there's so many reserve sides, you know, in what should be, as James said, an all-important opening weekend. And, you know, attendance isn't quite as high. I think what you do see because of, you know, Brazilian sides playing so many games during a year is that, you know, ironically, it's actually, I think, better for player development. You know, there's a lot of criticism about, yeah, the length of the state championships. But the truth is, you know, a lot of big clubs in Brazil have a lot of games to play. You know, they could have up to 90 games a season, which means that a lot more players get to play. You know, we do see these youngsters getting a chance to come in and prove themselves in the reserve side of teams, the result of which is, you know, Brazilian clubs tend to have much bigger and deeper squads than European equivalents. I think anybody that plays Football Manager knows that just from managing any Brazilian team, it's probably that they're astounded by the amount of players that any given Brazilian club has. So I think, like I said, ironically, you see that for player development, this actually might be a good thing. But like I said, I think it makes the competitions sort of lose a lot of their prestige.
Well, we'll move on and take a look at the championship as a whole. Obviously, the squads aren't quite finalized yet. They've got a few weeks to sort out their transfers And then the international window, of course, is open in June to July now. That's another fiasco where they've changed the dates of that in the past couple of weeks. So we'll start then with potential champions. When we did our season preview earlier this week, we picked out four sides in particular who have the potential to be champions. Three of them from Sao Paulo and then Fluminense from Rio de Janeiro. The three Sao Paulo teams being Corinthians, Sao Paulo, and Santos. James, would you argue with that? And which of the four then would you pick out as potentially the winner of the Brasileirão 2012?
Oh, that's a big question. No, I wouldn't argue with the candidates. Although I'd probably put did you put Internacional in there? I would probably put Internacional in as a dark horse. Along with Fluminense, Corinthians, and Santos, it's hard to look beyond that. In terms of who might win, again, funnily enough, the calendar becomes. We talk far too much about the Brazilian footballing calendar. You know, you should never have to talk about a footballing calendar, but in Brazil, it becomes so important because there's no space for international breaks. And this year, that's going to include the Olympics. So Santos are going to lose Neymar and Ganso and Rafael, maybe one or two others. Internacional will probably lose Oscar and Damião. And that could have a both for friendlies and the Olympics. So that could have a major effect on those teams. If you imagine that Neymar might miss. So I don't know, 7 or 8 games at key points of the season on a team that when a player of that ability is his team's not, it's not a one man team, but they obviously depend hugely on him. And when he's not playing, they're a far less threatening proposition. I read something this week that Globo have said they're not going to show Santos games when Neymar isn't playing, which gives you some idea of the level of his importance.
Thing is, I guess, that until they finish their Libertadores campaign, he might be left out for other reasons as well.
Exactly. I mean, it's quite possible. Internacional, for example, aren't in Libertadores. It's quite possible that Libertadores goes on until it's July, isn't it, the final, I think. So it's quite possible you could end up with, if Santos continue dropping points and playing reserve teams, it's quite possible that Internacional could end up, you know, maybe 9 or 10 points ahead of them if they go on a get off to a good start, which is going to give them a huge advantage. So, if you want to bet, do I have to give you a name? My title tips.
Let's go for it.
I'm going to say, and this is completely out of the blue, I'm going to say Fluminense because I think Corinthians will win the Libertadores, so I think Fluminense will win the Brasileiro.
Okay, well, before we go to Rio, I'm going to go with Corinthians myself. I think Sao Paulo and Santos will be affected heavily by international call-ups over the summer with the Olympics, as you say, and the friendlies. And then Fluminense, I'm not quite sure about. Plus, we have the added factor that Fred might also have to play in international games, which would be a big loss for them as well. Rio?
Yeah, so I'm going to be boring and replicate James's pick here and say Fluminense. You know, I really do think that this side is playing superbly right now. And very importantly, I think they've also deepened their squad over the summer, over the offseason, without really losing any key players. I think, interestingly, Fluminense were actually the best side in the league for the second half of the league last year. They also were, of course, Carioca State champions and are also deep in the Libertadores. And like I said, I think they've kept the core of players. Fregi is absolutely phenomenal up front. Deco has really come into his own and it has been playing, although he's injured right now, but have been playing like he used to at Barcelona. And also Wellington Nain has come in and been simply superb up front. Add the likes of Rafael Sobis and He-Man up front, and that's really a superb squad right now. So I think Fluminense are my title favorites.
Ever since, if I could just jump in, ever since like when you described their run towards the end of last year and their Carioca performance, ever since Abel Braga has come in basically as coach, they've really come together, and their winning percentage since then, I'm sure, is just second to none. No, I'm looking forward to see what Lanzini can do this year. I think he'll get more and more playing time as the season goes on, and he's looked like a terrific talent so far in his cameo roles.
I agree. When I've seen Lanzini play, he looks a terrific little player, very much in the mold of other Argentine number 10s. I hope, particularly with their Libertadores run going on, that we'll get plenty of time to see him in the Campeonato itself. Rio, James picked out Internacional then as a potential dark horse. I'll explain the reasoning I didn't include them in my title hopefuls, and that's purely based on the defensive half of the team, which in my opinion is a lot weaker than the attack. I don't rate particularly Rafael Moledo and Indio as a centre-back partnership. Well, where do you see them coming? Obviously, we can't really rule them out with the terrific attacking talent they do have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, right before we started, I wrote down that Inter and Flu are actually my two sort of top favorites for champions. I agree that defensively they're not as good, and also I would say that their bench is not quite as deep as the likes of Fluminense and Corinthians and São Paulo, and even Santos, who have a much deeper bench this year. And as James said, you know, when the Olympics come around, losing Oscar and losing Damião, that's going to be a huge loss for them. They do have Dagoberto, who they signed and has shown signs of what he can do, and was very good today in the opening game. I sort of claimed earlier this year that I thought Dagoberto and Damião can form a superb partnership up front. We saw signs of what they can do together today, and I think that will only shine further, especially with somebody like D'Alessandro and Oscar behind them. But yeah, like you said, not quite as good, solid defensively as they need to be. With that said, you know, I think some of the other big names that we can't forget are Vasco, Corinthians, São Paulo, and certainly Santos. A lot of it is going to depend on how far some of these teams go in the Libertadores. A lot of it is going to depend on who loses who during the Olympics. You know, unfortunately, those factors really will play a significant role on how the season unfolds. But I think, you know, if you look at the strongest team, the teams at their strongest, those are probably the six best teams in the league, I would say.
I think, Rio, I don't know if you'll agree, most people are fairly unanimous that Botafogo and Vasco will be top half, probably challenging for Libertadores, but they don't really have the strength in depth to challenge for the title. And the same that down the bottom of the table, there's maybe five or six teams that most people expect to be in contention for relegation, which are obviously the four who've come up, and add to that Figueirense and probably Atlético Goianiense. Most people who I've read previews seem to be fairly united on those two facts. I guess the only change I can see personally is that one of the six teams down the bottom, maybe Sport or maybe Figueirense, if they're new players that come together, one of them will have a season that will propel them into the top half. But as for Botafogo and Vasco, I can see anywhere between maybe 5th and 10th place.
Yeah, I think that's fairly accurate. You know, one thing I will say is that last season, I think many of us didn't count Vasco very much for deep runners and, you know, sort of taking Corinthians down to the wire for the title. And then the reason why was because we said Vasco didn't have that deep of a bench. especially given the Sulamericana run that they had. But, you know, they came through, and you know, their first team squad was probably driven to exhaustion by the end of the year, but they came through. With that said, they do rely a lot on Felipe and Juninho Pernambucano in midfield, and both those guys are only getting older. So, you know, this might be sort of one season or and too many games for those guys to keep having the same effect that they're having. So I would agree with you. You know, I'm obviously biased as a Flamengo fan, but I certainly would put them in the top half, with the most optimistic of people saying that they might even compete for the Libertadores. But I do think that that's a bit of a stretch for them at this point. And yeah, for relegation, I think it's pretty obvious who the main contenders are. I think probably the two most guaranteed relegated teams are probably Náutico and Ponte Preta. But yeah, you know, there's the other ones you mentioned, and you know, some would even say that your Cruzeiro side might be down there.
Thanks for bringing that up, then, Rio. So
I was itching to do that as well myself.
Seeing as there's a consensus then on possible candidates for relegation, we'll look at four teams now who tend to divide opinion. We'll start, as you brought them up, with Cruzeiro. They started with a 0-0 draw at home to Atletico Goianiense today. They were terrible under Wagner Mancini before this week. I described it to Rio as one step up from that. So it was a slight improvement, but still a fairly disappointing showing. James, do you think they're serious relegation contenders, or do you think with the couple of signings that are coming in, they'll be all right?
I think they'll be okay. I think having Wallace back, if he can get back to the way he was last year, will make a big difference up front. And I think Tinga was a good signing. He's 30. He's 34 now, I think. But he's a kind of player. Now that Cruzeiro are in these reduced circumstances, and they're not what they were a couple of years ago, he's the kind of player who will do well, I think. And I think Celso Roth is a good appointment as manager. He's for me, he's quite an underrated coach. If you look at his record over the last couple of years, he's actually done reasonably well. He did well at Atletico. I think it was 2010 or 2009 or 2010. He did well at Atletico, and he kept them in the title race for quite a while until they fell away disastrously at the end, and then of course he got sacked. And also, he did reasonably well at Gremio. But he's one of these managers that never seems to get the benefit of the doubt. If it's, shall we sack him or shall we not, the vote always seems to be, yeah, let's sack him. So I think he's not a lovable manager, let's put it that way. But I think for Cruzeiro, again, in their kind of sort of mid-table circumstances, he could be the right kind of manager that'll keep them hovering around in maybe seventh or eighth or ninth. I imagine anyway. I mean, there's holes in the team. So, and they had a terrible year last year, but I think they'll be okay.
Rio, he's come in and he seems to have gone straight away for experience in Celso Roth. He's gone for Souza from Fluminense, also Tinga from Internacional, as James mentioned. And after that, Alex Silva, who they picked up from Flamengo a couple of weeks ago. These are experienced players at Brasileirão level. It's the kind of players who will keep you safely in that mid-table region.
Yeah, well, certainly I think that's the theory. You know, we have to see if it works in practice. It, you know, it usually does. And, you know, I do like Alex Silva. I think he's certainly a, you know, would be a first team choice center back for most Brazilian Serie A sides. You know, and I think that Tinga, Celso Roth knows him very well from his time at Internacional. And I think that's just, you know, a player he knows well, he trusts, and Tinga really likes him. And, you know, Tinga could have stayed and still been a part of the first team at Internacional, but chose to leave in what he called the hardest decision of his career, to go to Cruzeiro. So I do think that these signings will stand them well, especially down the stretch. If the team does happen to find themselves in a tough situation, those are the types of players that you can rely on to overcome tough situations towards the end of the season.
Moving on quickly then, to your Flamengo side then, Rio. Some signings this week. You mentioned Ibson from Santos, also Amarell and Jorge Luis in from Carioca side from the state championship, Wellington from Resende a couple of weeks ago. Are these signings that make you happy, or are you still a bit worried about the squad?
Well, certainly I like the Ibson signing, and I think that will be very important for midfield. I don't necessarily like what Fla gave up for him, which is, you know, they paid some money and they gave away David Braz and, more importantly, Gallardo, the 20-year-old Brazil under 20 right back, who, you know, I think is a very short-sighted move by Flamengo. They did sign Wellington Silva, the young right back, who, you know, looks promising and should certainly be a capable second choice, but I think it's still a bit foolish to give up Gallardo. Like I said, very short-sighted move. But Ibson will be important player for this Flamengo midfield. Obviously, Wagner Love is still the man up front. I think David G has improved since Wagner Love has arrived, so the attack for Flamengo should be potent enough. I'm not convinced Joel is the right man. I'll admit I don't know quite as much about the other signings from the other Carioca sides, so I'll have to watch and see how they do. But yeah, this side is still, you know, they certainly won't be competing for the title. They'll be lucky to make it into the Libertadores, I think.
James, Flamengo then, does Joe Santana do it for you? And does their hopes of possibly a Libertadores place, does it depend solely on the performances of Ronaldinho over the season?
I'm not a big Joel fan. I think he's a fairly negative coach, and again, I mean, there's a major issue here in Brazil in that there aren't an awful lot of exciting options around as in terms of young innovative trainers, and even when there are the clubs don't give them enough time, and or they're reluctant to give them a job in the first place. When they do give them the job, they don't give them any time to do their work. So you have people like Joel who do the rounds, and then they always get jobs. They always get job offers based on not very much, as I can see it. We're talking about São Paulo before, and the coach there is Emerson Leão. And as long as he stays there, I can't take São Paulo really very seriously as being a contender for the title. His last trophy was in 2005. I mean, that's 7 years ago, and he's had a lot of big jobs since then. So for a top level coach in Brazil, 7 years without a trophy, not even an estadual, is a very long time. And Joel seems to me a similar kind of boat, just going from club to club, firefighting more than really putting in place any kind of long term vision or plan. Flamengo have some great players. There's a lot of great young players, as we know. Luis Antonio and Moralha, for example, and the goalkeeper who played against Sport did really well on Saturday. Paulo Vitor, who's been there for a few years now, but hasn't played very many first team games, but he looked promising on Saturday. So there's players there, but I think it's almost psychological, isn't it? Psychologically, they're very dependent on Ronaldinho and Wagner Love. So yeah, Ibson will make a difference, like Rio said before. Ibson had a fantastic spell for England in 2008, 2009, I think, maybe before. If he can recreate that, he's going to take a lot of the pressure off of Ronaldinho Gaúcho, but they could do with someone alongside Wagner Love up front. I don't think David is really the answer. And just a different outlook, just a different philosophy, because the club just seems to lurch from one scandal to another with no sense of forward momentum. So I think those would be the issues for Flamengo for me, not just the playing staff, just the general philosophy.
Quickly, Rio, how does the club replace Williams?
Well, certainly Williams is a big loss because he has been one of Flamengo's best players, I think, in the past few seasons. Last year, not quite as big of a season. He sort of had a falling out temporarily with the club and was out of the team. But, you know, he's a tenacious midfielder, can be very box-to-box at times, but can also be just a strong holding midfielder if he needs to be. Tenacious and, you know, a ball winner and ball stealer and just reads the game very well. Great signing for Udinese for the money that it was, I think something like 3 million euros, which I think is a steal for the 24, 25-year-old. You know, I think, as James said, you know, this is a great opportunity for the likes of Muralla and Luis Antonio to step in. Obviously, there's also Cáceres, the Paraguayan, coming in a month or so once the transfer window opens. That's probably the direct replacement for him. But, you know, I do think it's a great opportunity for those youngsters at Flamengo.
Moving on then, James, we've talked about these coaches who are very much run of the mill. One coach who isn't is Filipão at Palmeiras. It's certainly one way you could never describe him. But this Palmeiras side has received a lot of hype at times in the Pauli style, but they very much flopped when it came to the knockout stages. Hernán Barcos doesn't seem to be scoring with the regularity that he threatened when he first arrived. There's still some big holes in this Palmeiras team.
Yeah, definitely, particularly up front. And I think they're running around fairly frantically trying to bring in some strikers. They talked about Obina. There was even some talk about Eder Luiz from Vasco. It looks now like it's Thiago Ribeiro, the ex-Cruzeiro striker, who's going to get the get the call and then come in to help the Palmeiras attack, which is, as you know, it's Luan and Barcos and Mike Onlechi at the moment, pretty much. So they do have some gaps. A lot depends as well on our friend Valdivia, who's a great player. I think everyone loves Valdivia when he's on form and when he has the ball at his feet, but he's very inconsistent, and again, he tends to get himself in scrapes. So either he or Daniel Carvalho will need to become more consistent playmakers and start creating more chances for the strikers, and then again, they will need that attack. Again, they're all often perhaps more important is, again, the general climate of the club. It was that which put them off the rails last year when Filipão and the board started openly abusing each other in the media. And it was Roberto Friso, who's the Filipão's sworn enemy, I think the vice president. That seemed to go away during the state championships when they were winning, but it seems like it's not... Not far, it's just bubbling beneath the surface. Filipão wants more players, and the directors say, well, you know, you're going to have to do with what you've got to a certain extent. So the atmosphere at the club isn't particularly good, and you wonder how long it can go on for. I wonder if they get knocked out of the Copa do Brasil and don't get off to a good start and then Serie A, might be the end for Filipão. I think his contract's up at the end of the year anyway, so we'll see.
And finally, James, then the other club that no one seems quite sure how they're going to do is Grêmio. They spent a lot of money this year on several signings. Unfortunately, Kleber is now out for some time with an injury. The same for Bortolio. He seems to be out for a month or two now. But other than that, there's still plenty of talent they brought in. Marcelo Moreno, Souza in particular, Fernando has come through from the youth team. He seems to be doing very well, but there's still, I don't know if it's part of the climate of the club like some of the others we've mentioned, or if it's there's still some areas of the team that are fairly weak, but their results are still remarkably inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, they lost today to Vasco, and you're thinking with Vasco with half an eye on the Libertadores on Wednesday that's a game that Grêmio could perhaps have won, but they didn't. They have it, like you said, they've got some good players. Marco Antonio, the midfielder, came in from Portuguese and he's done well. They have Naldo, the centre half as well, very experienced. So there's good players there, and there's also of course Evander Luxemburgo, the coach. With Gremio, sometimes it's a question of style. They're just never a very. There is this image of Gaúcho football, which is about raça and garra, and as they say in Brazil, the determination and sweat, if you like. And they never seem to really. They never seem to be particularly thrilling side, Gremio. So they tend to get bogged down in these kinds of uninspired runs of form, if you like, which maybe in part comes from their outlook. And I wonder, we were talking about Leão and Joel and Filipão and Luxemburgo. Perhaps part of it is these coaches don't. In recent years, they haven't had an awful lot of success, not all of them anyway. And then they come in sort of as the savior of these clubs. And they get paid fantastic salaries. I mean, I think Rio can confirm this, that Flamengo, I think Luxemburgo was on 600,000 reais a month. I think I'm sure that's right. And Filipão, something similar, if not more.
So about 200,000 pounds a month.
Yes. Is that something about that, which is just an incredible salary, you know? And then... When things go well at the start, it's great, and the directors and the president who backed that coach are saying, well, you know, look, I got it right. We're fantastic. This is great. This is the future. But then the other half of the board are going, well, we didn't like him in the first place, so just wait until he starts losing. And then you get these boardroom divides. You get half of the directors saying negative things in the press. You get the manager reacting against them. You get the president coming out to defend his coach, his choice, if he's lucky. And meanwhile, the players are looking on fairly with amusement, you know. And it's just not, it's not a, it's a long way from Barcelona and Pep Guardiola, let's put it that way. It's just not that there never seem to be particularly harmonious environments when you have these big managers in. Too many egos, maybe. Too many egos spoil the brew.
I will. Rio, would you agree with that? I think we're talking maybe about four of the least harmonious clubs in Brazilian football here in this unpredictable section. And they say often that to be a successful international side, the country needs to have a stable government behind it, and that leads to success in the sporting arena. Do you think it's the same with these clubs? The players struggle to perform consistently if there's disquiet at boardroom level?
No, certainly that's absolutely the case. And, you know, I don't think that's, you know, special to Brazil. I think anywhere in the world, if you look at teams that are, you know, having sort of struggles in the back room and clearly disorganized running of the club, then you know, that same attitude comes through the team out in the field. And, you know, Grêmio is certainly a club that suffers from that, along with a lot of other clubs in Brazil. Unfortunately, that's something that's very common in Brazil with a lot of clubs. So yeah, you know, I think there's very few clubs in Brazil that are sort of very settled and give their managers enough time to really implement a long-term vision and have sound, you know, decisions in the transfer market. You know, you see a lot of clubs that make very short-sighted decisions. We spoke of Flamengo's trade for Ibson, you know, a player in his late 20s, and they're giving up two young players for him plus some cash, and even a potential other deal that they're talking about. They want to bring Juan back, the center back from Roma, who certainly would be a good signing, but is something like 35, 36 years old, and they're thinking of giving up Tomas, one of their youngsters, for him, for, you know, a player that can come in and maybe play 1 or 2 years. So it just goes to show, you know, these are the types of deals and the types of thinking that boardrooms in Brazil very commonly do, and they don't really make a lot of sense sometimes.
All right, then moving on quickly, we're going to have to rush through the Brazilians abroad section. The big two pieces of news from Europe this week, obviously the Champions League final, David Luiz involved in that. While Ramirez and Luis Gustavo had to watch on from the sideline, Rio's Chelsea side came through victorious. I'll get his thoughts right at the end of the show on that. Also, Victorino Hilton was crowned champion of France today with Montpellier. The La Palliade side won the French league on the final day, finishing ahead of PSG with their little Brazilian contingent there. So congratulations to those players involved. We just want to finish the show then with 10 or 15 minutes on this week's Libertadores ties. We've overrun a bit talking about the Brazil RL. So starting off then, we've got five Brazilian sides involved. We'll start off with the all-Brazilian clash, which saw Vasco take on Corinthians last week. The first leg at the São Januário was 0-0. James, who do you see coming through this one?
When we were talking about Vasco for Serie A, when we were sort of deciding on they're probably a mid-table side at the moment, I was kind of torn, because when you look at the size of their squad and you look at some of their players, Alexander, for example, I don't really consider him to be a top-level striker. You look at the age of Juninho and Felipe as well. It is very easy to look at them from a glass half full kind of perspective. But then you look at their results over the last year or more, and they continually surprise. So on paper, it's hard to look past Corinthians. I think they have a far stronger first team, a far stronger bench. They're playing at home. They just need a win. So you would bet your shirt on Corinthians. But the Invest Basco always have this ability to surprise. You know, they surprised us last year in Serie A. They surprised us in the Copa Sulamericana. So I will say Corinthians, but they would need to be very careful, because Vasco are a dangerous side.
Rio, no away goal there for Corinthians. When you've got a Vasco team, with particularly the likes of Felipe and Felipe Bastos, Juninho Pernambucano, and as James pointed out, Alexandro, but the previous three who can strike a ball from range as well, they don't even need to have a clear opportunity. That lack of away goal could come back to haunt Corinthians.
Yeah, I think that could certainly be the case. You know, I think at the end of the day, both these sides are more defensive sides than they are attacking sides. You know, I know Vasco is missing Dedé through injury right now, but even with Rodolfo and Renato Silva at the back, that's a very strong center-back partnership with Romulo in front of them. He's very good. And Corinthians, obviously, one of the best defenses in the Brazilian league last year. And, you know, I think they are, like I said, both sort of very organized, especially Corinthians, just very tough to break down that side defensively. You know, so many games last season that they scraped 1-0 victories from. And I think that, you know, it is a tough game to call. It probably will come down to just one moment in the game that the tides turn. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 1-0 game. I can't quite know which side it'll be for. It could be a dead ball situation, as you said, and maybe Juninho will come up with something special, or it could be that Corinthians wins it. You know, Corinthians are at home in the next game, so I would slightly favor it in their way.
Okay, there's actually only four Brazilian teams. I was getting ahead of myself there. The other two are in fairly similar situations. Santos went away to Vélez Sarsfield, lost 1-0 in Argentina, the same result for Fluminense in the La Bombonera against Boca. Fluminense were without Deco, Wellington Nem, and Fred G for that game. James, starting with Corinthians, then moving on to Santos, how do you think they will get on?
I think Fluminense should have enough to get past Boca. Boca are a defensive side, and against Fluminense at home with the attacking talent we talked about with Deco, with Fred, with Wellington Nem, with Thiago Neves, it should be enough. It's a bit of a shame that the home advantage isn't what it was. I was watching just before we came on. I was watching the the highlights from 2008 when Fluminense beat Boca at the Libertadores, at the Maracanã, sorry, in the semi-final for Libertadores, and Dodo scored in the last minute, I think, and there were 85,000 at the Maracanã to see it, and the atmosphere was spectacular. You know, they went on to lose to Quito, I think, LDU Quito. So it won't be like that because the engineer is no one's idea of an exciting football theater, but home advantage should be enough to carry them through. Again, the away goals are a danger because one goal from Boca will leave from an NC needing three, so they will need to be careful about the counter attack. Santos, similar situation. It's hard to see Neymar and Ganso and company not scoring at least once, probably more, which would in theory take them through. But I just wonder if or when Edu Dracena and Dorval are going to get caught out, because they are slow, and against a team like Vélez, who are going to play on the break, if they get caught out, then again an away goal could be disastrous.
Rio, quickly then, do you share a similar thought to James on the two matches?
Yeah, I think overall I do. I think for Fluminense, the really important thing will be which of their players manage to come back from injury. You know, let's not forget that they had Fredy, Deco, and Wellington Neng, plus a couple other players all injured for the first leg. So, you know, that's a very big part of their squad. You know, thankfully, like we mentioned earlier, Fluminense have a deep squad. They still have the likes of Thiago Neves and Wagner and Rafael Sobis that can still play and make an impact. But, you know, missing players of that stature, plus, you know, playing a man down for most of the game is always going to be tough. But, you know, depending on whether or not they get the players back, I do think Fluminense have a better squad and they should overcome at home. As for Santos, you know, I was reading the statistic that Santos had gone 30-something games scoring a goal in every game. They had scored 70-something games in 30-something games, which is pretty astounding. The last game they had not managed to score a goal in was, guess who, against Barcelona, right, at the Club World Championship. They had scored in every game since then. So I would find it very surprising if they don't score at home in the second leg. You know, that first leg game, I think Vélez was better in the first half. Santos was actually slightly better in the second half, which is encouraging. And I think Santos playing at home in front of their crowd with Neymar and Ganso, you know, I think they'll step it up, and I think they'll get the victory.
Well, that's the Libertadores wrapped up. We'll have a look next week at how they got on. Rio, just quickly then, I've got to give you a moment or two to talk about this. Particularly from the perspective of the Brazilian players then. Chelsea triumphed in Munich over Bayern, a terrific result, considering they were effectively away from home. Didier Drogba coming up trumps at the last. How do you feel, and how important were the Brazilian players to the triumph?
Well, you know, certainly I feel rather fantastic, you know. Although it's not Brazilian related, one quick aside I will give about this Chelsea side is, you know, obviously this Champions League trophy has been what this team has been after for the better part of a decade now. I think it's even though they relied on luck for several of the elimination stages games of this competition this year, you know, this still is a side that has gone to the final before, has been in the semis, I think, what, five out of the last six seasons or something like that. So, you know, this is a dynasty of sorts that has been very successful. And I think, you know, probably the last chance, or at least one of the last few chances for the likes of Drogba and Terry and Lampard playing together, you know, Cole and Cech and all these players to get this trophy. So, you know, I think given the previous seasons and everything that's sort of culminated in this match, I think they deserve to win it. I'm sure Bayern Munich fans will not agree with that, assessment, but, you know, sometimes football is about luck. With that said, you know, talking about the Brazilians, you know, Ramírez was suspended for the game, obviously, for the final, but, you know, I think he deserves a lot of credit for how far Chelsea got in the Champions League this year. On the Bayern side, Luis Gustavo has been simply phenomenal for them at defensive midfielder, also suspended for this game, so a shame that he didn't get to play. David Luiz, you know, played and made his comeback, had a hamstring injury, so it didn't look like he would make it for a little while. He only got 3 days of training, and I think he played superbly. You could tell that, you know, he wasn't quite leaping up as far as he normally does. He sort of had to give away a few fouls at times because he was concerned about his athleticism and injuring that hamstring anymore. But, you know, I think he played a very composed game. We've talked in the past about his inconsistencies and his hot-headedness, but I think he's progressed very well through the course of the season, and, you know, is really making a strong claim for himself to be the starting center back for Brazil in the years to come, probably next to Thiago Silva, but perhaps Dedé.
And James, quickly, Mano Menezes isn't the most popular figure on our podcast, as our listeners will know, but he said this week he didn't pick Ramírez because he's playing in a right-sided position for Chelsea, which isn't suited to the Brazil team, and when they have played that position, it's been Elano. So that was his justification for not picking Ramírez. What do you make of that decision?
Right. Well, I mean, the form that Ramírez is in, you've almost got to find a position for him, no matter what your setup is. And he is, as we talked about before, he's a very flexible player, so he can adapt to probably whatever system you would require. And while Elano's had some good moments over the last few years, I think the level that Ramírez is playing at the moment is some way ahead of Elano, who's not even perhaps one of Santos's principal players at the moment. He's a key player, but not at the level of Ganso or Neymar, of course. So yeah, a strange comment. I think you've got to find a way to get Ramírez into your squad.
And Rio, next week, you want to bring up some younger players for this season?
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, we ran out a little bit of time today, but, you know, one thing we'll do next week is look at some of the sort of youngsters to watch of the Brasileirão for this season. You know, I think there's a few more obvious names of players that are still under 21, 22 years old. I don't think too many would be surprised to hear Neymar is one to watch. He is still a youngster after all, still amazing that he's only 20 years old. But I'm sure we'll mention a few names that listeners haven't heard of from a few of the teams that aren't quite as big and popular in Brazil. So tune into that if you'd like to listen in.
Well, that's it for this week. It's been a pleasure having you both on once again. Thanks in particular to James.
No problem. Thank you. I enjoyed it, as always.
This has been the Elastico podcast on Samba Foot, and we'll see you all again next week.